The Association of Salaried Medical Specialists is warning that a shortage of specialist doctors is worsening. The union, which represents doctors and dentists, holds meetings with district health boards three times a year, and the first round of the year is currently underway. Executive Director of the group, Sarah Dalton, joins me now. Hi, Sarah.
Kia ora, Jessie.
So what's the problem?
The problem is that we have long-standing shortages of senior doctors and dentists. It varies a bit by specialty and a bit by region, but our estimates are that on average we're somewhere around 24% short of the number of specialists that we need.
What sorts of specialties are we talking about?
Oh, everything from salaried GPs, anaesthetists, physicians, psychiatrists, oncologists, pathologists, like the whole range of, there are a lot of medical specialties out there working in our hospitals and in our communities. And in some places it means people are having to travel long distances to get treatment, or they're not getting treatment at all.
How do you know the problem's getting worse?
Our members tell us that. We're surveying our members, and we're also seeing creeping rates of fatigue and burnout. So we surveyed them back in 2015 and again last year, and the rate of burnout and fatigue is slowly creeping upwards. The average age of senior doctors and dentists is slowly creeping upwards, and the number of people coming through and becoming, finally graduating as senior doctors, isn't keeping pace with acute demand. So there's different types of need in the health system. There's acute care and planned care. And the way our system is funded and staffed isn't actually keeping up with the rate of acute demand, which is the people who need absolutely urgent treatment.
And what sorts of effects does this have for patients?
It means longer wait times. It means sometimes they have to travel a long way to get the operation or the care that they need if there's none of the right kinds of specialists in their area. It might mean that they, say in the example of mental health, they might not be able to get access to an inpatient unit, or when they are there, they might not spend as long there as would be best in their best interests. So there's a range of consequences.
And is it that the population is growing and the number of specialists isn't growing with it?
So the rate of increase of the specialist workforce is slower than the rate, not just of population growth, but of acute demand. So the population we do have is presenting sicker, more complicated problems. And, you know, there's a whole lot of social determinant stuff around poverty, around access to healthy food, around if you're in a damp home. Those things make people sicker. They make people more likely to need hospital care and have to go back again. So they're complicating factors as well.
Why haven't the numbers of doctors graduating kept pace with the demand?
Well, one of the things we have been asking to see happen is a really coherent and well-organised central database that actually says, how many doctors do we have, where are they, what are their specialties, and actually map that against what we know is the current and projected health need across the country. There actually isn't one centrally organised sort of census or database that we can all draw on. So that means that workforce planning is a bit piecemeal and not very well joined up. And we think that's a logical starting point.
Isn't that something that the profession could initiate?
We're doing the best that we can, but also in terms of the public health service, of course, the specialists are only one part of the staffing puzzle. And so really the Ministry of Health and the DHBs need to be factoring in specialists, junior doctors, allied health workers, nurses, and the other support workers in the system. So it's a complex piece, and one for which overall responsibility really does sit centrally for our public health system. Mm. But, you know, we're happy to do our bit, and we certainly do the best that we can.
Right. The overview, the sort of the holistic view, taking into account all the different professions, that's why we have DHBs, right?
Yeah, and also the Ministry of Health, yeah.
What is your theory as to why it hasn't happened?
It's a really good question. I mean, at the moment we have we have 20 DHBs. We have an underfunded kind of national, well, we don't really have a strong national public health, which is about prevention and planning. That's a bit undercooked, and that's something that the Simpson Review noted. We're not serving the interests of Māori and Pacifica people well. There's health inequities in place. So there's really this massive overall planning piece that needs to be done. And I think, you know, a better joined up system is something that would help. But I guess our point is, no matter how great the system is, if we don't have the people in place to staff it, it's still not going to work.
What needs to happen from here?
Well, the workforce planning, but I also think some of the downward pressure that's on DHB. So the Minister's Letter of Expectation to DHBs has outlined an expectation that they're running break-even budgets within the next year or two. And that, of course, has a flow-on effect that where a service says, hey, we're short of doctors, we need some more, we want some more approval to increase staffing, that has to go all the way up the food chain for approval. And there's a desire not to continue to increase that workforce because it's expensive and DHBs are trying to break even. I just feel like, I know this, we can't spend all our money on healthcare, but how much is the appropriate amount to spend? And I don't think the system is actually meeting the needs of our population currently or what we expect of a public health system. So it would be great if we could have some better conversations about what's a reasonable expectation for people to have of the public health system, what services should be available right where you live, what things is okay for you to expect to have to travel for, what things can't we afford.
Which DHBs are suffering the most?
It really varies. In our burnout, Southern DHB showed a massive jump in rates of burnout across our workforce there, so we're really concerned about that. We're massively concerned about psychiatric services shortages all around the country. And West Coast, for example, have a massive GP shortage, which has big flow-on effects in terms of basic care for that population and then demand on hospital services.
And you mentioned psychiatric services. Any other specialists that you're really short of?
We're short of oncologists. We're short of so many different types of radiation oncologists, big shortages. Lots of people I could name. I saw a piece in Stuff just today about a shortage of ENT surgeons, that's ear, nose and throat specialists in Taranaki, which means people are having to go over to Palmerston North for treatment. We know that there are paediatric surgical services in Wellington that people from the regions are having to fly in to access. Now, sometimes for what we call tertiary services, quite subspecialised things, the kinds of services you'd see coming out of Starship, we might accept that that's necessary. But every time people have to travel out of their own home area for treatment, that has massive costs, both on them and their families, but also on the system. You know, and people have to take more time out of work, they have to pay for the travel. There's some assistance available, but it puts massive strains on people and their families to have to do that.
And say we need a new oncologists, how long does it take to train one up?
Depending how subspecialised they are, it could be between 12 and 18 years, right from the beginning of their medical degree until they become what we call an SMO or a senior medical officer who's completed their training. So it's a long-term prospect.
Yeah. Or you find one overseas, I suppose.
That's right, and we have a heavy reliance on international medical graduates, so more than 40% of our senior medical and dental workforce are people who did their initial training in another part of the world, and we are so grateful that they choose to come and live and work here. But what we also know is, as a cohort, they are more likely to go back home at some point, so the churn of that international medical workforce is higher than the churn of locally trained doctors.
Sorry to hear this is the case, and nice to have a good chat to you about a solution that doesn't just include paying everyone more. I'm sure that's on your list of desires as well, but nice to hear some constructive suggestions on how to fix it. And thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks, Jesse.